Now it's time for more of Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's talk hookup. Get ready for more of the best fishing information and the hottest tips on improving your angling skills. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup. Shimano Rods and Reels, fish with the best. Shimano. And now, Southern California's sports fishing voice, the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Let's Talk Hookup coming your way here. Again, signing off from that 97.3 The Fan. A big thanks to Kyle for keeping us rolling. But we're pumped, man. We got another hour coming your way here live, Facebook and YouTube live, as well as on that Let's Talk Hookup app. And what a great hour this has been, having a great time. Corey and I hanging out with you with Eric Landesfein, talking all kinds of great fishing, inshore fishing, offshore fishing, sport boats, and more. As you heard at the beginning of the show, Pete Gray is out of the studio right now. He's out in Montana keeping the trout honest, but we're having a great time hanging out and talking fishing with you. And, man, what a great time this has been, and what a killer gift Eric has brought our listeners today, Corey.
I know, right? A Pin Fathom 300 low-profile reel. It's super cool. It's what he uses even offshore, right?
It's got to be a bread and butter rig for you guys.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So that going to one lucky caller, texter, caller from the first hour, and we'll take the accumulation of texters, and we'll flip a coin. We'll have him flip a prize coin right here, and it's going to one lucky caller, texter. Pretty cool. Thank you for bringing that, Eric.
You're welcome.
Just super stoked. I mean, Eric is so knowledgeable on really everything. I mean, inshore, offshore, and just stoked to have you in studio.
Thank you.
Yeah, gonna be a fun one for sure. Well, the first hour flown by, but lots of great text already standing by. I wanted to start it off with this one. It's from Darren, who's checking in from Menifee. Says, hey, happy summer to everybody, Rick, Corey, and Eric. Bass Bite has been epic. With the Chovy around, Eric, can you tell us what your favorite plastic to throw? Does it change based on the bait available, i.e., do you change things when there's grunion on the beach or Chovy offshore, et cetera? Also, Corey, your new grunion-colored slug is spot on, and it works. Love it.
Nice. Yeah, I do change presentations based on the bait that's around, especially, you know, fishing kelp beds and things like that. This year, there's been a lot of, and last year as well, there's been a lot of what I call rice, which is the very juvenile anchovies, which might be at half an inch long. Those really put a damper on the bass fishing, but if the bass to rice ratio is skewed in favor of the rice, you're going to have tough fishing. But if a lot of bass biting, they'll get that stuff schooled up, and you throw a 5-inch Viejo swim bait in there, and it's going to be a bite. And, you know, last season we had the same issue at Palos Verdes, where I fish a lot, and we switched from our normal 7-inch baits to our 5-inch baits, and we had three fish over 9 in 3 days up there.
That's incredible.
Yeah, thanks to Corey's magic baits. But
dude, three fish over 9 pounds is no joke.
Yeah, in three trips, it's just crazy. But that's, you know, the bait was acting a certain way, the bass were setting up in a certain way in the kelp, but it wasn't the same spot every day. They were miles apart. But once you could recognize that condition, you can go and repeat it. And I could spend the next 14 hours explaining that conditioning. It would probably still not get it across, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
Well, and even knowing that, though, Eric, even knowing what the clues are and how to line up the dots, it's difficult to connect that, like, the next year, the next season.
We'll go 5 years without catching a 9-pound fish and then have shots like that. But, you know, talking about out, you know, with sand bass and stuff, I fished sand bass on the spawning area there at Huntington Beach last week, and we didn't throw, and it's been that way all summer here. The swim bait is not necessarily the best bait out there. We were throwing crankbaits on those spawning sand bass. You know, I fish a Berkeley Dredger 17.5, which runs about 15 feet, or I'll throw a Lucky Craft Pointer 100 deep diver, which runs about 8 to 10 feet. And even in that deeper water, those fish are feeding on the anchovies that are on the surface, so you don't need to fish the bottom. And we've had a lot of situations this year with the anchovies around where even at the Newport Pipe Center River Pipe, there'll be bass boiling when you pull up. And you just drive around chasing boiling bass in 50, 60 feet of water and just throw small hard baits at them. And it's definitely the best way to do it. And with any hard bait, you throw a crankbait or a rip bait or a Lucky Craft, you're not going to want to do a steady retrieve. These fish want to stop and go. So cast the bait out as far as you can. Burn it down 3 or 4 turns the handle, and then pause and take 2 or 3 quick winds, pause. The length of the pause varies day to day, but 90% of your bites will be on that pause. It might be a 1 second pause. It might be a 10 second pause. Figure it out. They'll tell you. And once you realize what they're doing, just keep doing that.
What is it condition wise or fish wise? What is it that clicks in your mind when you decide to pick up a hard bait versus pick up a viejo? You know both of them catch a sand bass just fine. You know that fish is there. You know the bait's present. Why in Eric's mind, do you pick up one versus the other?
I basically, if there are fish that are willing to bite a hard bait, it's much funner fishery because you're not sinking the bait out. You're not going through the whole water column. You're making three casts a minute versus one cast every 3 minutes, and you have a much better chance of catching more fish that way, and you can also trick fish into biting. So if you wind the swim bait through an area, they don't bite on the sink or a slug, they're either going to bite or they're not going to bite. The slug's more of a reaction bait, but it's better when the fish are deeper. But with the hard baits, you can create something that's happening with that bait that will draw these fish in. The reason that the pause works is because these fish will hear on their lateral lines the movement of that bait. They'll clue in on it. They'll look at it. If you wind it straight, they're just going to follow it all the way back to the boat. But what happens when you pause it, these fish are hot. They're chasing behind it. It stops. They run into it. Mm-hmm. And there's been some days when they're on the small anchovy where they just headbutt it. It's like they're not even opening their mouth all day. And you'll have 50 bites for 10 hooked fish. That's how it was a couple of weeks ago down there. So, you know, you'd have to do a more erratic presentation or things like that. But baitfish colored crankbaits or small hard baits is a really good option.
That's so much fun. I mean, that reactionary bite.
Oh,
I mean, dude, El Salto style.
Totally.
Like, right?
Totally.
I mean, and catching big sand bass. And
yeah, and the one thing I'm going to add on to that is if you're fishing the smaller hard baits, like a Lucky Craft 100 size or 120 size, fish fluorocarbon line. If you fish them on Spectra, a lot of times you rip those fish off the second you hook them because there's no give. And that little bit of sponginess in the fluorocarbon. I don't like mono. It floats. Fluorocarbon sinks. It fishes more like braid. And you'll definitely have a much better hook to land ratio on that. With the crankbaits or the bigger hard baits, you can fish braid no problem.
Is it akin to freshwater fishing where for your hard baits you like a rod that's a little more parabolic and a little slower to keep hooks in them? Or do you not worry as much about it and you fish them the same rod you fish?
Everything I fish is parabolic and soft. You know, we fish basically for all hard baits we fish 9 or 10 foot crankbait rods that are custom built rain shadow rods. But they that softer tip, it really keeps the fish on them.
Okay. That's cool.
Such an important key ingredient. I actually have a good text here, and it's I actually want to know the answer to this one. Good morning, guys. Hey, Eric, what's the biggest calico you've pulled on off the Long Beach break wall? And please tell us how you got them and what were the conditions. And that comes from Rich in Long Beach.
Well, that's actually kind of a funny story. I was fishing a Santa Monica Bay-based bass tournament with Mark Higashi from Performance Tackle. This is in the early 90s. And a daytime event, we went down to fish the break wall. That's when they still allowed some of the you could use bait if you wanted to in these tournaments. And there had been a bite on sardines at the break wall, so I had a 6-inch big hammer. It was the biggest swim bait they was readily available back then, the old Style 9 shad head with mono back in those days.
Yeah.
I got a few nice bass on it. Yeah, I think my biggest fish casting to the wall was like 7 pounds that morning. And I had a deep loose line on the reel, you know, the mono kind of springs off, and you don't want to sink your bait out when you're casting the wall. So I went to the stern and just drew a long clearing cast off the back of the boat. All the loose line off was burning back to the boat, and about 10 feet from the boat, I got a 9 3/4 calico.
Oh, wow.
We've seen bigger fish here. We've seen, Matt and I had one that was probably, I would say 11 to 13 pounds come up and grab the boot of the swim bait when there was like a 2-pound fish hooked on it.
Oh.
And the fish was just totally, it was like a sand bass floating in a bait tank. It was on its back, rolling around. And it was like 10 feet from the boat,
wow.
But it's like,
crazy.
What do we do? You know, we couldn't net it. It was too far away. But that was probably the biggest bass I've seen locally.
Incredible. The Long Beach breakwall, the federal breakwater up there is so unique. Like we have jetties and we have, you know, breakwaters up and down the coast.
Yeah.
But they don't compare. That fishery up there is amazing.
Much deeper water. It's a much bigger piece of structure. And like any other piece of what you call superstructure, which is something that's bigger than one spot, is those fish live on there, and they could be 2 miles away from where they were biting the day before. And when you're fishing a break wall, especially during the day, the number one sign is cormorants in the water near the break wall. Or, you know, if there's a bunch of seagulls and pelicans sitting on a certain section of rock, there's probably bait fish around there because they're not going too far.
That makes sense. And it's tough to break down. It's 7 miles of breakwater. 7 miles. And the boulders are like a VW bus.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
well, you know, huge. Also, so 7 miles of breakwall on two sides.
Right.
We had years, especially after the 2015 El Nino, when there was some holes knocked in that breakwall, that every big bass was living on the inside.
Really?
Yeah, we were, you know, we'd go out in January and have 50, 60 fish on crankbaits. I think our biggest one we got inside was like 8 pounds.
Jeez.
Yeah.
It's an amazing fishery. I mean, there's a whole, like, cult following.
Yeah, sure. I've spent the first 3 years of a boat ownership fishing nothing but
just
that.
Doing that.
Yeah.
You talked about that round of big fish you guys had at Palo Verde, too. What is it about that stretch of coastline that seems to have so many big ones?
I'm not exactly sure, but it doesn't get a lot of sport boat pressures. Mm-hmm. There's not many fish taken from there. A lot of private boaters fish it, but 90% of the guys, no offense to them, don't know what they're doing. And
well, they do if they're watching your videos.
Yeah. I'm not knocking anybody, but yeah. It doesn't get a lot of good angling pressure. And so there's not a lot of bass per acre up there. You go to La Jolla, and there's probably 50 times as many bass in an acre of kelp as there is, or Point Loma as there is there. But the fish do get older, and they're there long. You know, a 9-pound bass is 30 years old.
Sure.
And what's interesting, what happened so 2 years ago or 3 years ago, all the kelp died off of Phoebe. There was not a scrap, hardly any kelp anywhere. And the biggest bass used to be at Point Furman, the lower end of that thing. And, you know, we've had days where we've had 10 bass over 6 pounds up to 10 pounds.
Wow.
You know, in a quarter mile stretch of thing. But when all that kelp died off, those bass moved away from Point Furman and spread up the coast because they like that rock structure. Then bring in the landslides at Rolling Hills at Palos Verdes. It was on the news, all the houses they had, the red tag and all the other things. Bass don't like ground movement. So basically, if there's an earthquake, don't go bass, calico bass fish anyway. So those fish that were spanning from Point Furman to basically where the Trump National Golf Course is, all that area was having land movement, so they all left. And all that fish slid up around the corner to Rocky Point. And that's so we were seeing big bass that would normally be in areas where we could not reach them out in the kelp feeding with the smaller bass. And I think that's why those bigger bass are why less. And I'm hoping to repeat that this year, but it's just been so unstable up there. We're having 5 or 6 degree temperature swings overnight.
Crazy.
You know, I talked to Brandon Hayward the other day, and he was saying that where he's fishing sea bass, it went from 65 degrees to 57 overnight.
Right. That's so crazy, right? I mean, as much as we know, and I relate it to you, I mean, as much as you know about the ocean and what, you know, the kelp and all that stuff, it's still a mystery.
It's like every curveball, no matter how much you think you got.
That's
a
what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, I will say that over the last 2 years, I've probably spent about 100 days a year fishing Palos Verdes, and it's been very rare. Even if I go out 2 days in a row, it's very rare that the conditions are the same as the bass right in the same place.
But that's really for myself, and I'm sure yourself, that's what makes it fun.
Like, yeah, it's challenging.
Is trying to figure it out. It's just a chess game every time.
If it was wide open every time you go out, I wouldn't go.
Right?
I rarely go to Clemente anymore.
I'd give it a shot.
That's why I go to El Salto. It's a challenge every time.
Right.
Can you, as you pull the boat out of gear, is it the type of thing where you can identify the condition right away of knowing you're going to have a good day or a not day? Or is it a lot more, subset, minor things that make for the right day?
I can definitely know when it's not the day.
Yeah, I got you.
So we'll,
you know when it's not right.
We'll launch, we fish a lot in the afternoon, but if we do a morning trip and I get to Point Furman and it's been upwelling all night. So the Furman Canyon's right there. When we have these hot summer days and stuff, you get a lot of upwelling. The countercurrent that's on our coast causes that to upwell. If I get the Furman, it's 3 degrees colder than it is in the harbor, and I run to Trump, which is kind of right before the MPA. It's the last area you can fish before the Point Vicente closure that has kelp. If I get to there and I have not stopped the boat yet, most of the time I'll just bend it to the west end of Cat and go fish calicos there because I know that around the corner it's going to be no better.
That's it.
Yeah, how far of a run is that for you to Cat from there?
Oh, it's less than 20 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a short run.
That's pretty sweet, man.
That's great, man. Awesome. Awesome info. Hey, I had a fun text. Says, good morning, guys. Happy Saturday to Eric. I love your reports. You do an outstanding job covering all of Southern California fishing. Questions, what boat are you currently running, and what's your favorite way to target calico bass? Also, I'd like to throw in, I took my 5-year-old daughter out on Thursday to catch some of those sand bass, and she was able to rope a couple of her own. A 1.5-ounce lead head on an MC Viejo and a 3/4-ounce lead head on an MC Slug were getting chewed better than the Chovies, and that was all from Rory in Lakeside.
Oh,
that's
cool.
Awesome.
That sounds like a lot of fun right there, man.
Yeah, so that in my boat is a Robalo 226 Cayman bay boat. It's 22 foot 6 inches, obviously. And I'm not saying because I'm affiliated with them in any way, other than them giving me a good deal on the boat because it's the first one on the West Coast. It's, you know, it's probably the most stable riding bay boat, and the...
It's got a deeper V in it, so it's it's like worthy of offshore.
Yeah. It's, you know, I've been in tournament starts where there's much bigger boats. The 24-foot Cayman also, and... you know, big rangers and stuff like that. We had a tournament at Ventura where it was quite rough on the way out, as you know that channel could be, and we beat the second boat to the island by 25 minutes.
Wow. No
kidding. That just shows you the stability. And, you know, it's also stable while you're fishing on it and stuff like that. The only drawback is they fix that now, but the older models only have a 50-gallon fuel tank, or 60-gallon fuel tank, I'm sorry. So if you like to race around, you got to be careful on how far you go.
And what does she have for power?
200, okay. Yamaha.
Cool.
They also come with a 250. Mm-hmm. I don't really think the extra speed is... I mean, I can go 36 knots, which is plenty fast for me, but you're burning 19 gallons an hour at that point, so 3 hours, you're empty. But I've taken it, I mean, to the Butterfly out of Newport and just cruise. You know, if you keep it at 26 knots, you get over 3 miles a gallon, you know, 3.5, but if you're wide open, you get like 1.9 or whatever, and it's...
Yeah, she goes fast.
Yeah.
Now, what about the second part of Rory's question? You do a lot of calico bass fishing, and it's, like, seems to be a specialty of yours. You've kind of got it wired on catching them a lot of different ways. All things the same, and you could catch them on any arrow on the quiver. What's your favorite way to catch calico bass?
The first bait I pick up when I go calico bass fishing, and I normally leave it in my hand, if I'm fishing the kelp, I normally leave it in my hand, it's a 7-inch MC Weedless.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that thing is... even if they're not biting it, they will show you if there's biting bass there. And I might have to make an adjustment down to something smaller, but that will let you know if there's biting bass in the area.
It's my favorite thing because it is a fantastic lure to draw a big bite from a big calico bass, but at the same time, a guy like me that likes action, a 13-incher will eat it, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing I love about that lure is you're going to have a big profile, you put a big hook into something, you can cast it anywhere. I know Corey is not that way, but I do. You can bomb a long cast if you want. You can rip it 10 feet from the side of the boat. You can sure do a lot of things with that lure, and you get great longevity with that screw lock. Like everything about those things are great.
And my second favorite, as of late, is Corey's 7-inch slug on a keel hook. Can you tell me the hook that's Kamigatsu?
There's so many different slugs and stuff, right? So there's like
A 6-inch.
Well, there's a split-tail version that's like 7-inch, and there's the...
The 6-inch.
It's like 6.5-inch. Okay, it's almost 7-inch.
Yeah, almost.
Is the more cigar-shaped.
Yes.
So it's what we talk about. It's the 5-inch weedless on a 7-inch Kamigatsu. And the same hook will fit that 6.5-inch slug.
Yeah, and the beauty of that bait, Corey's made that bait for fishing the surf and stuff, and we've kind of taken that and taken it to a different level. And if you guys are old enough to remember fishing the 8-inch slug on the hook, it fishes just like that on top of the kelp, except you can fish it much faster.
Right.
And you can throw it over anything. And, you know, I burned that bait back. I fished it on a 300 size reel full of 30 pound on a very light rod. And, you know, if you want it to stay in the water maybe 50% of the time, the rest of the time it's popping out.
Mm-hmm. God, that sounds like so much
fun. And those
fun.
Bass will just cartwheel out of the water from it. And, they don't bite it that well for us in the cooler water times. I prefer the 7-inch weedless. But that thing, if those bass are feeding on the surface, that is the funnest bait there is.
There's nothing more fun than calicos missing, jumping and going crazy, and just
these three try to eat it and miss, but the one you didn't see comes burning.
The 5-pounder
and
totally.
Well, what's funny, the first time I was really starting to fish that bait last year, the year before, I went to San Clemente Island with Jimmy Decker, and he'd never seen it. So I'm like, hey, check this out. And I cast in the kelp, and I'm skipping on the surface, had like a 25-pound yellow comfit ear.
No!
I just stopped winding. And it let it go, and I'll be okay for it. I never would have caught that fish.
Wow. Yeah. How cool is that? And so the whole thing with that, too, I want to mention is there's a lot of things that are weedless. but they have a horrible hookup ratio.
Right.
You're sure right about
the
that.
The hookup ratios with that setup is as equal to the weedless.
And either they'll blow it out of the water or it'll just suddenly be gone.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's I'd say it's a higher hookup ratio than weedless.
That's cool. And, like the big, you know, you talked about you fish it like the big slugs. Is it the same way that you impart virtually all the action via your reel handle? Like your handle is what's making that thing.
So I'm holding that rod at a 45 degree angle to keep all the line out of the water. I'm just doing quick stop and go over. I'm on radio showing hand signals again. I always do
that.
Okay, there we go. You impart that action and you want the bait to stay on the surface. You know, one of the things that happens after you catch a few fish on it, the hook will tend to pop up and then it becomes a submarine. So if that happens, just push that hook back down into place and go back to doing your thing.
That's cool, man.
All right.
How much does that make you want to go do that right this second?
Like right now?
I mean, right this second, I'm down.
I love it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's definitely good stuff.
You had a great text standby?
I do. There's so many good ones coming through, and thank you for sending them. And this one, great to hear, Eric. We have struggled with establishing a good game plan and then using our electronics to find tuna. It would be great to hear Eric's view on the best way to develop a plan for a day on the water. Any resources to help learn how to use our electronics more effectively? And this comes from DJ in San Diego.
Good question.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, I do a lot of tuna fishing where there's nobody else. I won't go to where the fish are biting, the boats are. I just can't stand that. So the first thing and the most important thing when you do when you leave the harbor is set your fish finder to 200 to 250 feet. And what will happen, all these modern fish finders, they'll just default up to your prop wash turbulence of 0 feet when you're running. And if you have a through-hole transducer, you're better off. If you have a puck on the back of your boat, that's fine. But basically, I would pick some local banks that are in somewhat of a line and just run bank to bank. And while you're running, keep, you know, every minute, look down at your fish finder and check your water temperature and look for any change more than a half of a degree. And if you have a more than a half a degree change, suddenly it goes from, you know, 71 to 71.5, stop the boat for a minute, get your stabilized binoculars and scan around in the circle. See if you're near any banks. If you are, go towards that bank. Watch your fish finder.
That was a weird one.
Yeah, right? Okay. I know.
Can't say we've had that one before.
Yeah, you know, watch for anything on your fish finder. That might be bait balls. That might be tuna schools. If you see shearwaters, which are those gray things that look like pigeons sitting on the water, drive across them, turn and drive right over them, and they're going to take off before you get there. And if they circle around and fly right back to where they were sitting before and land again, they're probably sitting on tuna or bait. Otherwise, they're just resting. So if they circle right back, then I would drive around that area with my fish finder looking in. A lot of times those schools would be down 100, 200 feet, but on the late morning or early afternoon slack tide, those fish will come to the surface and feed.
The ocean could look completely different in 3 hours, right?
And yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to Clemente in the morning, saw a couple of rafts of shearwaters on my way there, kind of made a mental note on where they were, fish bass for 3 or 4 hours, go home, and now it's just foamers and bluefin.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. And the shearwater is one of those overlooked birds. It's kind of like a offshore guy would call the seagull or something.
Yeah,
but
so I'm going to rank birds here for you guys. It's important if you fish offshore.
It really is.
Your number one is small terns. Not big terns, small terns. And small terns that are chirping or small terns that are communicating and active. That is telling you that there's something happening, these birds are working.
I think that's a least tern.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
The big terns suck. They're
really?
Good to kill.
Come on.
They're good to kill. But other than that, next up is the shearwater.
Yeah.
That is always going to be something you're going to look for. There aren't where there's bait, there's shearwaters. The third would be the brown seagulls, which I don't know if they're a different
species. I don't know their
names.
Yeah.
White seagulls are just as happy eating fries in McDonald's parking lot as they are anything else. And if you ever pull up on a bird school, no matter how big it is, if it's what Booger from the San Diego calls a dirty bird school, which is pelicans, shearwaters, all that stuff, just keep driving. So there you go. Shearwaters and terns.
And if you ever want to screw up your buddy that's tailing you, throw over a bag of popcorn.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. And, hey, if you're fishing in the bay, look for the western grebe. If they're diving, there's spotted bay bass under them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
I can make no comment on the popcorn bag.
Right?
I can either confirm nor deny anything. Don't even know what you're referring to. Hey, I will say we heard that ringing tone. Something up with the hotline. I'm sure it's something that Pete would have already figured out and fixed, but you know, your number two beast, you know, triple A's third string in here on this side. Haven't been able to get it. So, unfortunately, haven't been able to connect with both Rosie or Mark Wish. Both of them were trying to call and not quite able to. That report, obviously, is sponsored by Fisherman's Processing in San Diego, where you get that premier processing experience. Check out the easier online system to book your processing orders for your long-range trip. With more team members, Fisherman's Processing stays far ahead of the rest. More same-day capacity and the finest customer service. You can stop by their location in Old Town on Taylor Street or check fishermansprocessing.com and be sure you make that reservation today. Certainly going to work on the phones, and hopefully we get that rectified, and if so, we'll certainly get them in there, and if not, we'll try to get them on tomorrow, because there's some very good fishing to be had. Fun watching the, you know, all the social media updates from Rosie at Cedro Sport Fishing and seeing all that great yellowtail and a huge influx of sea bass. Man, there's good sea bass fishing right for those guys this week. And then obviously our fishdope.com report with Mark. Lots of great fish going on. But, yeah, lots of it. We're going to try and get it rectified, but some pretty good fishing to be had.
You know what amazes me is, okay, you look at our Channel Islands and our coastal sea bass, and it's, like, really good right now, right?
Right.
And you think it's good all the way down to Cedros, Central Baja.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, that's a huge spread of fish.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the same in San Quintin and along that coast?
Yeah, they get them down there as well. You know, and, you know, speaking of that, you know, I mentioned Brandon Hayward earlier. He's been getting 45 to 65-pound bluefin on the beach for the last month on squid beds that are around. In
sea bass.
Yeah.
Sea bass.
Sea bass. And
incredible.
It's, I mean, just these giants. He says it's the best fishing he's had since 2012 for sea bass on the beach. And
amazing.
Nobody's doing it because everybody's catching bluefin and going to the islands and loading up and everything else. So.
And that's one of the great things about right now is everybody's spread out. That bass fishing is down here or up there, and the sea bass fishing for him on the coast is over here, and there's tuna local, there's tuna far, there's tuna up or down. It's just, it's really good.
Or how about the sea bass in Channel Islands?
Right.
I mean, it's been just been a killer year. They struggled last year, but this year's been on fire.
There's probably the most white sea bass in Point Loma that I can remember in years. I mean, certainly since the big squid era time. I mean, there's a lot of short to just legal sea bass, but then there's big, you know, big resident fish in with that too. It's just it's good.
It's incredible.
We're in a really healthy spot right
now.
Dude,
when I say that we're living the good old days,
yeah,
it's happening right now.
Unless you fish PV.
Well, you know what's funny, maybe
a month ago now, we were fishing calicos. There were bird schools, and the calicos were up boiling. We pull into the kelp and started seeing some bigger boils, and it was, you know, 25 to 40-pound sea bass eating mackerel right there with the calicos. They wouldn't bite anything that we threw, but I had one chase a big hard bait back to the boat. I almost tried to figure eight it to see if I could get it to eat it there, but it swam away. You know, it's
incredible.
Kind of cool.
You guys have an awesome fishery. I mean, like, when all said and done, what's Eric's favorite way? I mean, favorite fishery and...
Yeah, that Palos Verdes fishery is hard to beat. And where I live, I can pull out of my driveway and be fishing at the lower end of PV in about 40 minutes.
That's cool.
That's
which
incredible.
Which is really nice. You know, that's one of the reasons I bought my house where I bought and everything else, to have access to that.
Long Beach, man. That's right where I grew up. Not far from you.
Yep.
That's cool. All right. Hey, when we come back, we got a little more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way. Really good stuff going on, Corey. And again, if somebody wants to join us, it's only through that Let's Talk Hookup app.
And not only that, the Let's Talk Hookup app, you know, send us a message for Eric or a question. We're giving away a Pin Fathom 300 size bass fishing reel. Also catches bluefin. We're going to be right back. You listen to Let's Talk Hookup with Eric Landisfine. We'll be right back on the Let's Talk Hookup app and YouTube and Facebook Live.
Haida Safaris, formerly Queen Charlotte Safaris, invites you to experience the magic of Haida Gwaii Islands, British Columbia, Canada. Hi, I'm Valerie Hopebridge. 25 years ago, I fell in love with these incredible islands, the breathtaking scenery, the warm community, and the truly phenomenal fishing. That passion inspired me to open my own fishing lodge, just steps from the Sanspit Harbor at Haida Gwaii Safaris. You will be fishing in pristine, pressured waters for Chinook, King Salmon, Halibut, Lingcod, and much more. Plus, be surrounded by untouched beauty. We pride ourselves on creating an unforgettable venture that turns first-time guests into lifetime friends. You will come for the fishing, and you will come back for the memories. We are booking now. Call us at 1-877-815-2892 or visit our website, qcsafaris.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram. Haida Gwaii Safaris, where adventure and friendship meet.
Boy, it's time to talk about some great gear from Shimano. And man, Very exciting times coming up this week with the ICAST show coming over in Orlando. And, you know, for one of the first times ever, Shimano's kind of gave a little heads up. You know, nothing specific yet via their social media, but brand new Corrado being introduced at ICAST this year. Some new spinning reels debut this year. But the biggest thing for us is the newest generation of Talica. The Talica A, we saw the new 12 and 16, and then the new 20 and 25. This year, there's the new Talica 50, and then a brand new model being offered in the Talica 40. So we will get to know a whole lot more about it as the show goes on, and we'll get a little more info. But very exciting times. It's ICAST. Stay tuned. Brand new stuff coming for Shimano. We'll talk about it here on Let's Talk Hookup. But for more information, check out your local Shimano dealer.
It's employee pricing, and it's happening now at your San Diego County Ford dealers. That's right, employee pricing across a full lineup for trucks and SUVs. A lineup featuring California's number one truck brand and Ford F-Series, America's all-time best-selling SUV and Ford Explorer, the iconic Ford Bronco, and more. No automaker employs more hourly workers or assembles more vehicles here in America than Ford Motor Company. And that's a commitment your San Diego County Ford dealers share by offering employee pricing to you. It's only for a limited time. Exclusions apply. Hurry to your local San Diego County Ford dealer today.
Hey, anglers. AFCO Pro Captain Ben Florentino of Coastal Charters here. As a full-time guide, I'm on the water all year long. It's my livelihood. Having the right clothing is of the utmost importance to staying warm, dry, cool, and comfortable to endure whatever the Pacific wants to throw at me. Thankfully, I'm equipped with AFCO clothing to keep me dialed season after season. Do yourself a favor and check out AFCO's award-winning gear at a dealer near you or learn more at AFCO.com.
All right, welcome back. Let's Talk Hookup and share in the studio with Eric Landisfine and just having a good time. And, dude, talking bass, talking bluefin, and we're giving away a Penfathom 300 reel, man, and one lucky caller texter.
I'm about as far from the IT guy as it comes. Far, far from it.
Well, if you're I'm like far, 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 far.
I can cast a surface iron a long way. I can do better than most of the guys that I stand next to.
Yeah.
Pushing buttons, not my forte, but I think I got it.
I got it.
So, okay. With that said, we're going to go live now to the East Cape. We got our man, Chris, from the East Cape Smokehouse is on the line with us. What's up, Chris?
Rick, Corey, Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Eric, what's up, guys? How are you doing?
Doing great, buddy. Good morning. Glad to have you, and I was very glad to hear your voice coming through. Always like hearing about Smokey's Curing Company in Cantina, and it was a pump to have you on the line, buddy. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Excellent show as usual, but really love listening to Eric's knowledge and obviously great fisherman. Anyway, so this week, really, honestly, you know, we've been waiting for that tuna bite to happen. It's been a little bit tough sledding. You know, we're getting some out there. They're about, you know, 20, 30 miles out, but the weather hasn't really been cooperating. We've been having some uncharacteristic, really high seas and winds outside that have been affecting things, but really, honestly, still, we had an excellent week. More blue marlin landed than striped marlin this week. So
really?
Blue marlin everywhere. And so, you know, guys are, having a lot of fun doing that. But, man, again, for Corey, we got rooster fishing that's just going off right now. And, I mean, so, you know, shore fishing, guys are catching them on the fly. Anywhere between, you know, right here at Laying Arrow, right in front of my house, and over on down to La Ribera. And then in the bay over there, just between Punta Reina and Cabo Pomo again, right there at Las Barracas, lots of big roosters. So, I mean, just a lot. If you want to catch roosters, you can do that all day long.
Man,
go ahead.
That's incredible.
Yeah, totally.
I ran into a landscaper. His name was Gavin, and he was just down there with his son. Dude, he was showing me pictures of huge rooster fish, like beautiful.
Yeah, man, it's just going off. So like I said, if you got to take the good with the bad, and, you know, you can just change gears and go do something else if you're not catching, you know, certain things like that. But, like, again, for Dorado, I think we only saw maybe one Dorado this week on the dock. So that's really concerning there. But again, so if one thing's not working, you can go do another. You can go catch blue marlin, some tuna, very few wahoo this week. Bait wise, we've got, sardinas, ballyhoo, caballitos, the green jacks. Those are working really good for the rooster fish as well. But, there's a big, Dorado tournament, you know, we got the Dorado Shootout coming next week, but there's another big Dorado tournament tomorrow up in La Paz. So we'll be anxiously waiting results from that and seeing what's going on up there. But yeah, I mean, we're hoping we can get some better weather here and get back into the tuna bite and start bringing in the poundage again. And, you know, hoping that Dorado bite turns on, too.
Well, I bet it's always happening at the cantina, though, right?
You know what, guys? It's always happening there. And, you know, you guys know, we've been diligently quenching pie holes since 2008 in the bar there in the cantina. But we reached a momentous milestone this past week. Yeah, we quenched our 1 billionth pie hole this past week, so I'm really proud about that.
Congratulations. What an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And some very serious ones down in the Cape.
Yeah, there's a lot of repeats. I mean, my personal pie hole is probably good for a couple hundred G's, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
An awesome time, brother. A fantastic report. And, man, we love everything. Sure love going down to Smokey. Sure love all the fantastic service that you do for everybody, keeping us up to date with the Cape. If somebody wants to come join you at the restaurant, quench that pie hole, or go on fishing on the nicest boat in the Cape, how do we do that?
You can email me at BajaSmokeDog2Gs@gmail.com. Call me at 858-231-1358. Get a hold of me at VaqueraSportFishing.com, and
awesome.
We'll be happy to take care of everything.
Yeah, fantastic job as always, Chris. Really appreciate you. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
I'll look forward to you guys. Take care.
Appreciate that very much, buddy. Well, Rosie had mentioned trying to call in, and definitely just wanted to pass along at least a synopsis of her report for everybody going down to Cedro. She had lots and lots of baits in the water, a mix of sardine and red crabs, still plenty of mackerel. Water's still a little bit on the cooler side, so there was a lot of slow trolling and yo-yo jig fishing that had been working best. It hadn't been a thing before. Still plenty of surface iron fish to be had, but some of the better big fish slow trolling fishing the yo-yos. They had three personal bests this week at the lodge, including a 38, a 42, and a 48-pound yellow.
Man.
Wow. How cool is that?
That's
unbelievable.
Done. A little cooler water, man. Bring it on, right? Dude, the sea bass, too, man. Like...
Javier, who's one of the fantastic captains that runs the fleet down there, and the guy I've been lucky enough to fish with a bunch. It was fun. You could tell the sea bass fishing was really good because his mom was at the store on the phone while he was on the water trying to buy everything they could sea bass wise up there, including Corey. They bought a, you know, I hate to say this.
What's
because
that?
I know how long yeah. you worked. Pouring all those baits.
Yeah.
Every single white fluke
you made
for us. No, he snatched every one.
Come on.
They said that has, like, absolutely been the thing. We had a group of guys, Reggie, who comes down. Their group took some of those down.
Oh.
Had great sea bass fishing with him. And, you know, he had his mom hop on the plane, come all the way up there, and just every single one.
What a horrible thing, Reggie.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah, so pretty cool for those guys going down there. Not a... snack up on some of those MC fluke style bait, you know, that split tail slug, whatever you call it.
So
that thing was hitting.
I'll tell you where the origin of that came.
Yeah.
And just to follow up on that, I'll bring more to put in the shop.
All right. Yeah.
Two different colors. How about that? But the origin of that was Jim Decker.
Yeah.
And those days fishing
the
sled head.
On the sled head. Yep.
And I just saw a better version of...
And it is a better version.
But, I mean, it's got the little bit of a blunt, you know, front.
Yeah.
And it's made for it.
I'll tell you what, that 7-inch split-tail slug on a owner's sled head, that was the half ounce is the bigger one?
There's two different sizes. They drive me nuts, though.
It's the bigger one of the two.
Do you like using it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if you got a kid that's fishing in the kelp with you, you know, we took Matt and I took Eric DeGucci's kids out when they were young. You give them one of those sled heads with that 7-inch split tail slug on there, and it doesn't stay in the kelp, and the bass bite the heck out of it. So it's a great thing for the kids.
But it's one of those things we talked about, the efficiency of weedlessness and the hookup ratio.
Yeah.
They don't match up very well.
Right.
Like, it's 100% weedless, but the hookup ratio is like 50%.
If they're biting, it's a little bit higher than that, but. Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe you're not that great of a fisherman.
You might just be right.
You need to come out and take some lessons.
Dude, I'll stick to bait making, man. It's all good.
We had a fun text come through. It says, hey, good morning, guys. Eric, Rick, and Corey. I really like Eric's report on the BD YouTube channel. There's always very informative information. My question for Eric, in your opinion, what is the best what's the best time of year for fishing Southern California? Or, excuse me, what was the best year for fishing Southern California that you've experienced in all your years, and why made it so? Looking back in the history books, that's from Mike in San Diego.
Yeah, I would say the best years that we had in Southern California is not, you know, it was a different time back then, but that 1998 El Nino, 97-98 El Nino, was the first time in my lifetime that we had easy access to exotic game fish and yellowtail and everything else all summer long. Compared to how, you know, back in the, you know, early 90s, if a half day boat in Long Beach caught two yellowtail, it was a big deal. I had a half day trip in 98, and I had 38 yellowtail. They weren't big ones, but it was pretty exciting times. After that, probably that 2015 El Nino, when we had the blue marlin in our local waters and things like that, and Wahoo, that
really
was pretty
special.
Cool. Yeah.
That's the one that kicks into my mind, too. Like, that was just, there was so many things available and at play and different, and you know, back then Neil and I, you know, fished out of a 19-foot plastic center console and had a day where we were trolling two blue marlin jigs and two Wahoo jigs
around
the
Coral
Islands, you know, and getting stopped, you know.
Right. You know, that yellowtail bite on the 150 up there in Long Beach that year was so, it was every single day. And, you know, what was great is, you know, as someone who lives near the landing or the launch ramp, I would launch at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon when all the three quarter boats and half day boats were going home, and all the skiffs would be wherever those boats finished up, and you could just pull up, find some turns, and have wide open yellowtail service iron fish on 30 pounders.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Insane, right?
We've had some pretty wild times.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I call that good times.
Yeah, I'm in for sure. You got a great text for us?
I do, man. There's so many coming through, Eric. It's awesome having you.
You're very popular.
Yeah. You are, man. Watch out. Hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks, Eric, for the fun show. I keep my boat in Alameda Bay, and I head up to PV a lot, and I don't do very well. Could you share one tip for fishing PV? And it says, thanks. That's John from Whittier.
Yeah. You know, the one tip for PV and everywhere else is you're going to want to find areas that have current running parallel to the beach. And parallel to the beach.
Yeah,
you don't want it going in towards the beach. You don't want it going out to sea. You want it going up or down the coast. And in the morning, they will bite on an uphill current, which means it's running from Point Firmin up to Rocky Point. If you find that later in the day, you're not going to catch much. So you need, if you're past 10 o'clock in the morning, you need downhill, going down the beach. And you're going to fish the leading edges. And there's a lot more leading edges than there are biting bass. So pull up, make five or six casts. And if you don't see a fish or don't get a bite, go to the next one. And don't discount little saddles of kelp that come out from the main bed, which I consider a secondary point, like a freshwater bass thing. A lot of times those secondary points will be where there are bigger bass. If you catch small fish on the leading edge, look down the kelp bed. If there's a couple stringers sticking out from it, go hit those. That's going to be your bigger bites.
Interesting. That's great info.
Yeah, I was surprised on that too. You know, growing up and fishing here, it's always, you know, there's always like a piece of into the beach that you want. Down and in, down and in, down and in is like, you know, the primo condition. But you're saying you don't want that into the beach
The way Palos Verdes lays out and the way the kelp beds are structured there, when it's going down and in, you have about a 10-foot section of kelp, and you're going to be in the thickest kelp. So there's not any way to set up and fish it properly. You might get one fish.
Sure.
But it's not going to be something you can make a continued drift on, and, you know, due to the swell direction, the wind, it always blows down the beach in the afternoons. You want to have the wind and the current going the same direction, and you can fish effectively. And some days you'll pull up on that leading edge, and that leading edge will bite for 300 yards. Other times they'll be fishing the first 20 feet of it, and then no more, or there'll be no fish. So yet you need to, you know, drifting too long in the kelp, and keep your boat outside of the kelp bed. Don't sit in the kelp, that's service kelp. There'll be kelp down on the outside, normally drift over that and cast into the edge.
Yeah.
If you get into that thick stuff, you're not going to drift, you're not going to catch much, and don't go longer than you need to because it's a real-time vampire. It's, you know, it's the equivalent of going out and saying, I'm going to go fish for marlin, I'm going to start at the 9 and put the jigs in and drive around at 6 knots. You're not going anywhere. Yeah. You're going to waste all your fishing time fishing properly, but not in the right spot.
That's good advice, man.
Great advice.
Yeah, dig it. Dig it very much. Well, that's very fun. Again, if you want to get through, send us a text. It's been incredibly busy this morning. Lots of great texts coming through, and we're going to continue to read them. Plenty of time here on Let's Talk Hookup. Another great one says, good morning, guys. Eric, can you explain the tactics for fishing the slide? My generation of fishing was not really around when that was a thing, and I hear the term used all the time. Thanks, and that's from Sean.
You know, it's funny. I was actually bringing it up earlier, but we went to a commercial break. If you're trolling, be it for albacore, bluefin tuna, yellowfin tuna, or whatever, and you're on a sport boat, you should have your fly line set up, or you're set up with a small rubber core sinker ahead of your hook, and you should have that hook in your hand. And you should be standing at the bait well with the bait pre-selected that you're going to grab the second you hear hookup. And you're going to nose hook that bait. And the minute that rod goes off, you're going to walk to the port or starboard side. And you're going to drop that bait over the side and put it in freeze pool. And keep it in freeze pool long enough that it gets back to where the jigs are. And then you're going to want to thumb your spool because you don't want your bait to – those fish will follow that jig up, and the boat doesn't stop immediately. So let's say the boat slides 100 yards. Those fish are coming with that hooked fish. That's why they talk about when you lose a troll fish, you lose the whole school because they don't follow that fish anymore. So if you just drop it back the minute that hook the fish is hooked, by the time the boat stops, your bait is going to be 300 feet behind that school. You're not going to get bit. And, you know, normally in that situation, you're going to get bit in the first 30 or 40 seconds. If you don't get bit by the time the boat comes to stop, wind that bait in immediately. And I would, you know, if you're fly lining, I'd switch to a collar hook bait or even a butt hook bait on an anchovy. I would say that's like a level 9 expert move, though. So if you're not familiar, you want to cast a bait off. You'll do a lot of that. But
casting a wet napkin.
Yeah. So if you're fishing the slide, always nose hook your bait, come up through the bottom jaw, out the top of the head for an anchovy or a sardine across the nose there. And once the boat stopped, I would switch to a collar hook or a butt hook bait, underhand lob it out on the up drift current or up current corner. And by the time that bait is fished around to halfway down the stern, you should be winding it in and putting a new one on.
Or maybe even halfway there.
Halfway across the stern is what I'm saying. I'm not even going to the other corner.
Yeah.
And what will happen a lot of times is that when the boats drift, where they're chumming is on the updrift or up current side of the thing, so that the bait will drift back with the current, and the fish will stick on that corner. So you can just lob baits in that corner. And a lot of these boats drift stern first, so if you've been in a stop for 30 minutes or 20 minutes, grab your bait and run to the bow and pitch it off there, because that's where the chum is.
That's one thing. I mean, we're all sport boat dudes, right? Grew up in it, sure. And live it today. That's one thing that I think that the majority of guys still don't do. Well, they don't understand. The boat drifts stern first.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's something. It doesn't compute and make sense, right?
And if you go to the bow and do that, I would butt hook your bait.
Dude, that was the Pacific Queen, Eddie McEwen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the thing.
That Pacific Queen is the boat that I learned that on. It was when Sam and Brian first bought the boat back in 90-something.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But that was the bluefin thing.
That was a perfect description of the slide. And this, my question is, how does that at all change if instead of fishing a chove and a rubber core sinker, if you're fishing a Colt Sniper, a mega bait, an MC swim bait on a lead head, does it change at all? Same idea?
So, yeah, just cast it back and let the move into the boat impart action of that lure. And then once the boat stops, wind in and do a different presentation.
And I thought that was great that you said, too, like, don't let it wash out to forever, you know, to forever. You're not trying to long soak an anchovy 300 yards behind the boat. Get it through the zone where the fish were at. You don't get your bite, wind it up, start over again.
And no matter where you're fishing, on a local sport boat or a long range trip or big yellowfin tuna, you know, down south, whatever, don't be the guy that's soaking your bait out and you're halfway up the down current side of the boat. Because what happens is your bait is not swimming anymore. It is just dead, and you have a big loop of line out. You're not even in contact with your bait. And yet, you know, years ago I was on a 10-day trip down at Leo's. It was one of those trips where the fishing was slow. We sat there for 3 days. This is when the Specter first came out, and these guys would just dump their spool, and there's surface current, and then below that there's nothing. So their bait is, you know, 50 feet behind the boat. They got 300 yards of line out in a big loop. And every time you wind it up, you got 18 lines on there. And I'm gonna say this. I got frustrated one day, and instead of untangling all the lines, I cut like four of them. These were the guys the night before the deckhand had served them a big platter of backlash line at dinner time to show them what they were doing. And these two guys wound in. They both were cut off. And they're both like, wahoo, and they went and grabbed their wahoo bombs and started casting those. I'm a much nicer guy now. I don't do stuff like that anymore.
That's the old days.
But that's why I fish on the private boat. I can't be around other people.
There you go.
Oh,
good.
Man. So that's well
fun.
Said.
That's fun.
And I know you very well. You're speaking the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's coming from a friend.
I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, thank you.
I love it. Well, hey, this is a good one here. It's from Joey in Menifee. It says, good morning, Rick, Corey, Eric. New to saltwater fishing, and I definitely want to get a new low-profile reel for bass fishing that would possibly be acceptable for yellowtail as well. My question for Eric, what pound braid should I start with? How much of a leader should I fish? And typically, what leader size do you like? Really appreciate all your help. Thanks for all the great info.
You know, if you're fishing a 200-size reel, I'd get 30-pound braid. A 300-size reel, I'd fish 50. I wouldn't fish any heavier than 50. You know, if you're throwing the MC Weedless, I'll throw 65 just to cut kelp better. But as far as leader goes, I like to keep my leader short enough that it does not go through the rod tip while I'm casting.
Super short.
Yeah, like 2 or 3 feet. If you're going to have your leader long enough that it's going to go through your guys, you should have a leader long enough that you can't cast it off your spool. Same thing with jig guys or whatever else. So it's either short enough not to go through your rod tip or 200 feet long. And that's more of a top shot than a leader. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's nothing more frustrating than having your knot. Even at the cleanest of knots
yeah,
going through
it,
your
it,
guides.
Once, so that knot hits your guides, your bait stops going, you'll get a specter backlash, which is probably one of the worst things on the planet.
Yeah.
And,
they suck. They do.
Yeah.
So what about leader size? I mean, I'm like myself, I'm 40 to 80-pound fluoro.
Yeah. I rarely fish lighter than 30-pound fluorocarbon with whatever I fish. If I'm fishing lures, I'll fish 40-pound. So
that's all good stuff.
Yeah. Connection make a difference for you, or is it because it's outside of the guides? It doesn't.
It doesn't make a difference. And I'll tell you one thing: in the last 17 years, I probably tied 5 leaders because I drive the boat. Whoever's fishing with me is the leader guy.
So that's
Jimmy
yes,
or Matt.
Yeah.
Jimmy likes the Seville knot, but it's got another name. It's that Chinese finger trap. I don't know if that's allowed to say anymore, but.
You're safe here.
Yeah, or like a finger cup where the line goes into the
so
hollow spectrum.
There's no knot in the mono.
Yeah.
It baptized the Tony Pena knot.
He's an FG knot guy.
FG
right?
knot,
yeah,
that's the one.
That's
yeah, and then baptized the Tony Pena. And the nice thing about the Tony Pena, if it goes through the guides mostly, the tag end points towards the reel, so it doesn't hang up, but that knot will hang up on the guides. And if you're buying a bass rod for casting artificial lures, you want to find one if it's a production rod that has a minimum guide size of 8.
Right.
A lot of these
great,
rods have the smaller eyes, and then you have guides, and then you start having problems casting.
That's great.
It could be a real big issue.
And you're right. Like the tendency for other fisheries is micro guides and smaller and lighter, that's a great one there too. Yeah, you want big enough that your connection's going to go through there. All right.
Perfectly, a
great one. Hey, another great info or another great question says, I feel like I'm missing the boat. I do all of my calico bass fishing on a traditional 5-inch lead head and swim bait. If I was wanting to break into the weedless, what would you recommend? Rod and reel size, and what bait should I be looking for first?
Well, you know, you can change. You use what you're using now. Whatever lead head you're using, switch it out to a VMC boxer head. And the reason that head works is because the eye of the lead head is at the very tip of the bait, and it slopes down directly. So when you wind that through kelp, it'll just ride over it for the most part. If you're winding, bait stays upright, you can wind it over stringers.
And when you say eye, you're talking about where you tie your
line. Yeah, the eyelid or whatever.
But it's so confusing because people they look at the weed guard, the weed guard covering the hook, and they think that that's the weedless.
Yeah, well, the hook is not what hangs up 90% of the time. It's the lead head itself.
Right.
So it'll slide over the top of that. And instead of sinking the bait out, burn it on the surface. And if you're having trouble because the bait's rolling around too much, you go to a low-profile lure like the MC 5-inch Viejos, which is designed to wind fast. And you can fish that exactly the same as you would a 7-inch weedless or anything else. And I would just use the tackle you have, get comfortable with that, and then you come to see Rick at the shop and say, hey, I want to fish a 7-inch weedless, and he'll set you up with the proper rod and reel for that. And if you want to truly fish the weedless swim bait properly, you're going to want a graphite composite rod, which is a graphite butt section, fiberglass tip, and a light rod, a lot lighter than you would think, a lot lighter than the bass rods are on a tip, because that bait, you have to pause and let that fish load on that bait. And if you don't see him bite it, you can't react fast enough to let that fish load. So by holding your rod at a 90-degree angle towards you, or close to a 45-degree angle, to the direction you're wanting to bait, the second you feel that strike, that softer tip will bend towards it and give you time to stop winding until that fish can turn with the bait in its mouth, and then you can set the hook.
And it's the same thing I teach too, right? So by that 90-degree, you keep yourself from setting the hook.
Exactly.
Right.
Like you're forcing yourself to give it the pause.
That's it.
Yeah.
Let him eat it, turn his head, so when you're swinging into the fish that's pointed away from you, so the hook drives into the right spot.
It's the easiest thing to comprehend and teach and be able to convey. It's the most difficult thing, even for myself.
Oh, I constantly jerk the bait out of the mouth.
Everybody gets
that's
excited
the fun of it.
And gets buck fever. Yeah. You're just remembering to position yourself in a way that you kind of can't.
If I didn't, why am I fishing?
Right.
So the advantage if you're in the bow of your boat while you're drifting, don't cast far. You know, Matt Koch, my boat partner, he's probably the best weedless swim bait fisherman for calico bass.
Dude, he's a stud.
On the coast. He's like a lawn sprinkler. And I've had guys that get up there in the bow next to him. After 10 minutes, he'll catch 5 or 6 fish, and they're like, I can't even get a cast in because he's hitting every stringer. And he's doing underhand lobs. He's not casting more than 20 feet away from the boat, and he's watching that bait the entire way. So every bite that he gets, he sees it coming. He pauses. He feeds them the bait. I'm fishing from the console, so I have to make longer casts. It doesn't really work out that way. So I get a lot of blind strikes, and that pause and that softer rod helps to get that hook.
Oh, man, such good stuff, Eric. Hey, we'll
talk about that for about the next hour, right?
Dude, we got a whole other show on that one. Look forward to having you back. But, hey, we're going to be right back on Let's Talk Hook. We're going to find out who's won this Pin Fathom 300 when we return on the Let's Talk Hook app, YouTube, and Facebook Live.
Anyone that's been to the East Cape knows Smokey's Curing Company Cantina, the best food and drink in Los Barriles, and a fun place to hang out and watch your favorite sporting event. If you're lucky, you probably had Smokey's process your fish to take home. Their quality and service is top-notch. You'll see me at Smokey's Cantina hanging out with the owner, Chris, and my buddies when fishing in the East Cape. And we always send our fish to be processed at Smokey's, too. Now Chris has added one of the finest boats in the East Cape available for you to charter for a day or more of fishing. Vaquera. It's an immaculate 35 Cabo with a Sea Keeper and Captain Diego Romero, one of Baja's best. If you're looking for a great charter boat when fishing at Palmas, Playa, or other resorts, Vaquera, booked at BajaSmokies.com, should be your choice. So, when you're headed to the East Cape, be sure to stop by Smokey's Curing Company Cantina. Send your fish to be processed there and fish aboard the 35 Cabo Vaquera. Check BajaSmokies.com for more details.
The top fleet and superb fishing is what Seaforth Sport Fishing in Mission Bay is all about. With free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, it's no wonder Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limits, Elgato Dos, Pride, Tribute Pacifica, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth, Sea-Watch, and San Diego offer the finest half and full-day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or regular open parties, schedule check SeaforthLanding.com. Run by fishermen for fishermen in Mission Bay.
Hey, this is Rosie with Cedros Sport Fishing. We have always been the leader in fishing trips to Cedros Island. We have set the bar even higher with our second lodge opening for the 2022 season. Side-by-side lodges sitting on the cliff's edge with relaxing ocean views. With direct flights departing to the CBX in San Diego, we are committed to providing first-class service to our guests and an unforgettable fishing experience. Come check out the yellowtail and calico bass capital in the world. Nobody does it better than Cedros Sport Fishing. Call me at 619-772-7570 or check us out at cedrosportfishing.com.
Inside information is everything when it comes to catching fish in Southern California. You need a code group to connect with what's happening on the water. Fishdope.com is your code group. Inside information available at your fingertips 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Fishdope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. Fishdope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane, along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. They become your code group. You get daily catch reports from point conception to Sankateen, 365 days a year. FishDope.com has online planning tools, temperature and chlorophyll charts, hot bite icons, and more. Take it from me, if you don't have FishDope.com, you're not part of the in-the-know crowd. Membership is affordable and good for an entire year. Plus, use the special code and save $30 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.
The lighter the bite and the cleaner the water means one thing. We need a thinner leader, more natural presentations. That's where Seaguar Gold Label Leader Material shines. It's Seaguar's thinnest leader material yet. That means it's even less visible underwater and creates more natural presentations for better catch rates on leader-shy fish. With exceptional knot and tinsel strength, this advanced leader material is now available from 2-pound tests for fishing trout in the Sierra to 80-pound tests for big yellowfin in Guadalupe. Get Seaguar Gold Label at your favorite tackle dealer or learn more at Seaguar.com.
All right, welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. We're going to have Eric flip the prize coin. Go for it on the deck there. Texter, and today is Mike. Mike from San Diego, congratulations.
Man, how cool, Mike. Congratulations on that. And you got yourself a brand new reel.
Dude.
Eric, this was great, man. I really, really enjoyed getting to hang and talk fishing with you. Some fantastic information for all of our listeners out there, myself included. Had a lot of fun and, man, really, really enjoyed you spending the time with us, brother.
Well, thanks for having me on. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, really cool. Looking forward to doing it again. And let's get Matt in here.
Yeah, next time we'll definitely do it.
Yeah.
And maybe we won't have Corey here.
Right?
Yeah. I just need to hog the microphone.
See, we need better fishermen on my phone.
That can do the ads.
Hey, if somebody does want to keep in touch with all your great reports, I mean, you want to talk about the common theme, and I know Corey the same thing, like trying to find a text message to read this morning that wasn't the same thing. Oh, my God, I love these reports. I love the YouTube channel. I love this. Keep it up. Everybody really into it. How do we find that? How do we keep in touch with your reports?
Just go to BD Outdoors on YouTube. I have a weekly report. It's up on Thursdays, normally around 7 p.m. I talk fishing. I talk about my dogs. I give really bad advice. I talk about being a fat man in a hot garage. A lot of different stuff. But I also write every month in Pacific Coast Sport Fishing, Tide Magazine, Saltwater Sportsman, and whoever else will have me.
That's awesome, buddy. Well, a fantastic job, and it was really fun. And certainly looking forward to keeping up with all those reports. You do a fantastic job, and I want to say it too, man. Keep it up. It's really good. And it's great info for all of us.
Thank you. I'm no Tony Bangos, but you guys will have to bear with me.
That's pretty fun. Well, Corey, a fun one today for sure, too. And look forward to doing it again tomorrow. Tomorrow, another great show. Captain Bruce Smith is going to be joining us from East County Bait and Tackle. We're going to be talking all kinds of great fishing, inshore, offshore, freshwater, and more. You stay tuned. It's Let's Talk Hookup. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 to 9 a.m. on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Facebook and YouTube Live, and 97.3 The Fan.